Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, December 28th, 2008, and this is show number 184. Well, hey, to any of the Mac ReviewCast listeners who snuck on over to check out the party here, we are having the party while Tim's off sipping his eggnog. So welcome aboard anybody who's here who wasn't here before. And to all of those who are always here, of course you're welcome. I hope you had a great holiday and you're gearing up for a happy new year. I had a blast going down to see my family in San Diego, and then we got to see Steve's family up in Fresno. We basically ate and drank our way up and down the state for 4 days. It was awesome. The one thing that makes me not dread these long drives in the car anymore is that we have high-speed wireless the whole way. I know I've told you about this before, but it just cracks me up what a huge pile of glop I plugged together to make this happen. I took a picture of it and put it in the show notes so that you can see what we plug into the car to make this work. So let me describe it. You start with the cigarette lighter outlet in the car, right? Well, you plug in a DC to AC converter, or I'm sorry, inverter, which gives us a regular AC two-prong outlet or three-prong outlet, right? Well, one outlet isn't going to be enough because you got to be able to charge a bunch of stuff while we're going. So I add a three-outlet surge protector to that, and the one I bought has two USB ports on it too, so you can charge iPods and iPhones and have chargers for your Macs on the way. Next, we have to plug in the charger for the cradle point, and the cradle point itself is the heart of the trick here. See, the cradle point takes in my Verizon EVDO card, I use a V740, and it pulls the signal in and converts it to Wi-Fi. So instead of just having an EVDO card plugged into my MacBook Pro, which happens to use the ExpressCard 34 slot, we actually can plug it into the cradle point and it converts it to Wi-Fi so everybody in the car can play. Well, I should explain that since the EVDO card is an ExpressCard 34 card, I have to convert it to USB using yet another little gadget, a little interface, to get it to USB into the cradle point. I mean, piece of cake. Isn't this what everyone brings on their car drives? I'm telling you, 6 hours from San Diego to Fresno went by in the blink of an eye. All right, let's dig into the show.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
How do I?
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, Kate wrote in with a really tough question for Dumb Question Corner. It sounded like a dumb question, but it took me a long time to figure out what the answer was. Here was her question. Hi, Allison. I listen to you when I can't sleep, and I still can't sleep. You're no help at all. Anyhow, I was disappointed that there were no dumb questions at 3:09 a.m., so here's mine. Show notes. How do I view them on my iPod Touch? Do I have to go to the website? If I leave a podcast and go online, still on my Touch, does the podcast quit casting? I know I could experiment, but I'm afraid I'll miss something because I haven't figured out how to bookmark podcasts yet. But we can save that for another dumb question. Well, she signed it, Kate in Southeast Michigan. And I wondered, did she know that I'm from Michigan too? Let's see, am I Southeast, South? Yeah, pretty much Southeast. I was born in Detroit and I lived in Plymouth and then Northville, Michigan. We sailed out of Traverse City and Charlevoix all while I was a kid, and so had a lot of fun there, and I really like Michigan. But let's get actually to the question. This one threw me because I go to great effort to create the full show notes on the web, and I also go to a lot of effort to create the short show notes that go into iTunes. This is a version that gives you the highlights, you know, just the highlights and the URLs that you need. Nobody puts the effort into show notes that I do. If you're on an iPod, non-touch variety, all you have to do is click the click wheel a few extra times and you get those shortened show notes. I figure nobody wants to actually read the 30 pages of notes that I put out on an iPod. I'm assuming you don't want that. Turns out you can also click them, get to them in iTunes if you click on the little I on the right-hand side beside the episode name. I went over to my iPhone and I figured, oh, I'll just click on screen and show her what I mean. And they didn't come up. Tried it on a few other podcasts and they did come up, but most of them showed nothing. So it was time to do some research and figure out what people were actually doing here. Turns out that the shows that do show their notes are actually pasting them into the lyrics field. This is so messed up. I'm not sure why they chose to display only lyrics on the iPhone and the iPod Touch and not the notes. Why wouldn't they do that? Now, technically, I could do all this for you, but here's why I probably won't do it. I have a complex workflow that would end up, I think, in an infinite loop if I tried to do this. See, I make my recording, I levelate it, I bring that AIFF file into iTunes, then I convert it to an MP3. Then, still in iTunes, I add all the information like the name of the podcast, the category of the podcast, and the artwork. Then I upload it to my server. I create the podcast episode information in Feeder, and that includes those shortened show notes. And that's where I link, inside Feeder, I link to that file that I've already FTP'd up to the server. Then I publish it. Well, if I were to take those show notes and put them back inside the MP3 file, I'd have to circle back with the show notes, put them back in iTunes, and upload it again. I mean, I suppose there's probably a direct path in there somewhere, but I've got this convoluted path down pat now. I'm kind of afraid to disturb it. Plus, I'm guessing that you would actually, maybe you would want those entire show notes, which would be way too much data for people, for most people, I think. I can't imagine they would actually want me to do that. So I guess there is an answer to your question, but I am too lazy to do it for you. We actually got three dumb questions today, so let's dig into number two. Pierre wrote in with an interesting question. He says, I have a potential dumb newbie question. Like a lot of people, I'm struggling to remove unnecessary files from my hard drive. In this endeavor, I was perusing my download files, and like a lot of folks, I have a lot of .dmg files for software I've downloaded. I could recover quite a bit of valuable hard disk space by deleting these files. Should I go ahead and do so? Best regards, Pierre Bourgeois. Excellent question. This is a fantastic question because I struggled with this until I came up with a plan. The way I decided to look at the .dmg installer files is I think about the likelihood that I would use them again if I lost my hard drive and had to reinstall. If it's an obscure little app that maybe never gets updated, or maybe an application that recently switched from free to paid and I want to make sure I can maintain the free version, then I would not only keep the .dmg, I'd make sure it was backed up too. In general, though, I toss them after a bit, pretty much whenever I'm looking to harvest some disk space. Most applications, I wouldn't ever use the old download anyway. I would probably go out and get the newer version after a catastrophe occurred. Does that make sense as a process? I thought that would probably work. At least that's what works for me. There is no danger in throwing them away as long as you can get a new one back. Well, Pierre went on to explain why he chose to trade in his Acura TL for an Audi A4 Quattro. He strayed from the Honda family. As much as I love Hondas and Acuras, he makes two really good points. There were two reasons. Number one, he says, the TL has an odd front grille, a little too Transformer-like. And number two, Audi's iPod integration was much better than the Honda Acura iPod integration. The Honda Acura approach is to let you use only a few preset playlists from your iPod, and they have a hard drive to allow you to load your music onto their proprietary system. I already have my iTunes and podcasts on a hard drive. It's called an iPod. Why would I want to reload some CDs onto another hard drive, one that's in a car? The Audi integration, the iPod is pretty seamless, and you basically select your music from the console, and that's 90% like doing it on your iPod. Well, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm right here with Pierre. It'll take a long time for me to get used to the new grille on the TL. It's the one they started on the MDX, and I never really liked it. Secondly, I think choosing which $25,000 car to buy based on its iPod integration is perfectly reasonable. Well, you think I'm joking, but that would make sense to me. Of course, not if it meant I couldn't go to Honda Bob in my case, but it turns out he's in Canada, so the next most important thing is the iPod integration, right? I forgive Pierre for straying under these trying conditions. Perhaps he'll teach Acura a lesson this way for the rest of us. Pierre and I went back and forth a few times discussing this when we thought when he bought his 2004 TL, it had a cassette deck of all things. I mean, come on, why can't they put a plain old audio jack on the front back then? I brought mine in 2005, and while they didn't have a tape deck, they didn't have an iPod jack by then either. The iPod had been around for 4 years by then. I'm really curious why they're so slow on technology like this. Oh well, I forgive you, Pierre. So, let's get back to the subject of what to do with .dmg files, because coincidentally, I received this email from listener Dave. Hi, Allison. I plan to do a total reformat of my system, and I'd like to selectively reinstall my applications. My question is, will I be able to reinstall the applications if I do not have the original disk image? I have all the license numbers stored in Yojimbo, but I deleted the disk images long ago. Will I be able to just re-download a new disk image and plug in my license number? I may have more dumb questions regarding data recovery for the reinstalled apps, but I'll save that for another dumb question. Thanks for your great podcast, Dave. Oh, wait. I think I read that wrong. Thanks for your great podcast, Dave. Well, Dave, you couldn't have been more timely with your question, and you and Pierre have proved the whole point behind Dumb Question Corner. If you have a question you think is too dumb to ask, I guarantee somebody else has that same question, so it's not dumb. You have an interesting situation where you didn't keep the DMG files, and now you want to reinstall. In general, this will work just fine. Like I said, the one case where this won't work is the example where the developer charges for the newer version, or it's an upgrade from the version you had and there's an upgrade fee. And you didn't pay for that upgrade fee. Now, it's possible some developers will give you the older version, but you'd have to ask them real nice. Ambrosia Software has a very odd model on serial numbers. They actually expire on some of their applications. So having the serial number doesn't actually give you a direct route to success. But if you send them your serial number, they will send you a new one. That's pretty much the only vendor I've ever heard that has that goofy process. But it's bitten me many times where I even had the DMG file, and I still had to contact them to get to a happy place. One more thing I remembered. Some applications, and I don't know if it's all or some or just the few I happen to have tried, some applications you can actually drag the application from one hard drive to another. I learned this a couple of years ago when I was at a cross-country banquet, and we were trying to get a copy of the older version of iMovie from one computer to another, and a friend of mine suggested that I just drag it. And sure enough, I dragged it and it worked. So I've done that twice now with iMovie. I don't know if it happens with other applications, but you may just be able to do that. And it just creates all the little auxiliary files it needs. Anyway, I'm glad you both wrote in on the same subject. That was really fun. So I'm recording right now in the live show over on ustream.tv/nosillacast every week, GMT minus 8, 5 p.m. Anyway, I'm in there recording right now, and right after I finished that little segment, Gita pointed out that it's only the applications that require a package installer that you can't drag and drop. So if these are the kind of things where you got a DMG and you open it up and there's an application, it drew a little arrow saying, just put me right in the applications folder, then you should be able to just drag and drop it from your old hard drive to your new hard drive or your backup to your new one. If it did require a package installer, though, you know, one of those little, what are they, orange little boxes, and you had to double click them, then you do have to do a little bit more work, and you'll have to get the DMG back. Well, now it's time for a quick word from our sponsors. If you're anything like me, and I know many of you are, you can't help but help other people with their computers. Your friends and family depend on you to give them instructions on all kinds of things, from web tool navigation to, heck, how to check their email sometimes, and they depend on you for help. Maybe you even have a blog where you like to post instructions with good screenshots and annotations to clarify things. If you get yourself a copy of Screen Steps, you'll be able to continue to make them happy while making yourself even happier. With Screen Steps, you get to spend your time writing the instructions, and you waste zero time formatting everything, making the words wrap around the pictures, opening 12 applications to get the arrows and boxes to highlight things on the pictures just right. Forget about all that. Screen Steps has a built-in screen capture tool, but hey, if you've got a screen capture tool that you really love, like Sketch, or heck, maybe you love the built-in tools in OS X, go for it. You can use those. All screen capture tools work with Screen Steps. Then all you do is type in your instructions, hit export, and choose from PDF or HTML, or you can publish directly to your own blog or to Screen Steps Live. You can do this on a Mac or Windows. Even Windows. Who knew? Anyway, you can download a free trial of Screen Steps by going to screensteps.com, and when you're ready to buy, make sure you remember to use the coupon code NOSILLA, that's my name spelled backwards, all capital letters, for 25% off. Well, as you've no doubt figured out, I think I might have just mentioned it, I've been creating the show on Sunday nights live on ustream.tv for quite a while now. The show's a lot of fun, and the chat room seems to enjoy chattering away amongst themselves, pretty much ignoring me entirely most of the time. But one thing they demand is that they get to hear everything I can hear. So if I'm playing something in GarageBand, like, say, Victor Cajiao's Dumb Question Corner music he made for me, then they want to get to hear it too. I think they're kind of picky, but, you know, what are you going to do? Got to make the fans happy. Well, this is actually a tricky problem. I'm sending my microphone input through my browser to Ustream. How do I also send the output of my sound card to Ustream? I don't have that choice in the menu. Well, I've been using Wiretap Anywhere from AmbrosiaSoftware.com to use this. Actually, it's AmbrosiaSW.com to do this, but it's in a beta stage and kind of hinky, and it hasn't been working all the time for me. I thought I had a defined process to follow that would be repeatable, but even that process stopped working after a while. I was really bummed about that, and the guys at Ambrosia have been able to reproduce the error, so I'm sure they're going to be able to fix it eventually. But for now, I needed a solution. Well, BJ came into the chat room one time. He suggested I try out Soundflower. And the next week, he suggested it again. And again, and again. And I kept saying, yeah, I should try that. Well, finally, last week, I actually gave it a try. I think I resisted installing it because I tried it years before and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why I needed it. Well, now I had an actual problem to be solved. I went online and to my delight found out that Soundflower is open source, licensed under the GNU public license. That means free, by the way. Soundflower installs a kernel extension that's a .kext file, so it actually requires a reboot. Now, my understanding of kernel extensions are something buried very deep in the operating system. So you don't really want to do a kernel extension update unless you're pretty sure this is a reputable, well-tested application. Soundflower has been around forever and comes highly recommended, so I proceeded with confidence. But I just wanted to make that little note. Once I had it installed, I didn't have a clue what to do with it. It's not an application, so I couldn't launch it. It's not a preference pane, so I couldn't get to it through system preferences. I could see it in the sound preference pane, though. It shows up just like any other sound device, like a microphone or a speaker. But what am I supposed to do with it? I read the README. I know, crazy, huh? And it said, to send the output of one application to another, simply select Soundflower as the output device within the first application and Soundflower as the input device within the second application. Okay, that made perfect sense, but I needed to combine two devices. So I went off to the internet to do some research. Luckily, I discovered exactly what I needed. Someone named Buana wrote a tutorial complete with screenshots on how to use Audio Hijack Pro combined with Soundflower to pipe more than one audio source into Ustream. I put a link in the show notes to buana.org where you can see the full instructions. The detailed process is critical to success, but I don't want to repeat it here because if you want to do it yourself, you really should check out Buana's blog because they did all the work. But I do want to talk through kind of a high-level explanation of how it works, because that's probably more interesting for everybody anyway. As Bonna explains it, you've got a couple of audio sources, like, say, your microphone and GarageBand. You hijack the audio using Audio Hijack Pro from RogueAmoeba.com. Now, luckily, I bought it a long time ago. It's only $32, but I already had it. So Audio Hijack Pro is the tool that actually combines the two audio signals into one. But it's not really a recognized audio source. It can pull them together, but that's not a source. That's where Soundflower comes into play. Audio Hijack Pro plays the role of taking in the sound from the mic and GarageBand and combining them, and then you tell Audio Hijack Pro to send the output to Soundflower. Since both the mic and GarageBand go into Soundflower, that becomes the one audio source you choose when you finally launch Ustream. One of the really nice features of the way this setup works is that you actually control the sound levels of what goes into Ustream using Audio Hijack Pro. The reason you care about that is, for some reason, GarageBand is really loud when it gets to Ustream. I've no idea why, but if you turn down GarageBand so it doesn't blow out the listener's ears, it ends up being really quiet for you, too. The Audio Hijack Pro, you can turn GarageBand down for them, but it stays at a good volume for you. Let me tell you, there is one single thing that the chat room will not tolerate, and that is having their eardrums blown out. They're very, very picky about that. Well, Soundflower combined with Audio Hijack Pro is a perfect solution, and now everyone's happy. Thanks, BJ. Thanks, Ambrosia. Thanks, open source developers. And thanks, Buana, for making the instructions for me. Okay, here's a problem statement. I love sharing my photos online. Well, that's not the problem. That's the fun part. I love sharing them on Facebook and on Flickr. All right. I don't love Flickr, but I've begrudgingly begun trying to use it for my better photos, reserving Facebook for the family and friends snapshots. This was all good for a long time, but somewhere along the lines, things started to get hinky. I actually remember the specific day it happened. I was at a hotel in Boston for the Enterprise 2.0 conference, and I tried all evening to upload photos to Facebook, and they simply would not go. I could send one picture, and that was it. It would go forever. It would pretend to go, and then it would fail, and it would pretend to go. It took forever to fail, and I've been having trouble ever since then. I was using the Facebook uploader that hooked into iPhoto. I was able to select photos, click a button, name the album, tag the photos, write captions, and then click upload, and in a while, all my photos would be online. That day, though, like I said, only one photo would go up. I struggled for a long time. I tried using the Java uploader on the Facebook site, and it would sometimes work. Lots of times that wouldn't even work. Then I tried switching to Safari from Firefox, and that would sometimes work. I was aggravated every time I tried to upload photos. I finally was able to settle into this clumsy pattern. See if you can follow this. I have to change my default browser to Safari, and then I could upload to Facebook. The problem, though, is that Adium, when it's set up to use Facebook chat, it's incompatible with Safari. So if I have Adium open, Safari would log me out of Facebook, completely defeating the purpose of uploading pictures into Facebook. So here's the process I was following. To get my pictures up, I have to open Safari, open Preferences, change to Safari as my default browser, quit Adium, launch iChat, then I can upload pictures. And remember, I get to reverse all that to get back to Adium and Firefox when I'm done. I should mention that this is the exact same problem occurs when I'm on using Flickr. Now, the chat room's suggesting that I use Safari and iChat, but I don't like Safari as much because it doesn't have all the plugins, and I don't like iChat as much because it doesn't have the Facebook integration. I love the Facebook integration. I can chat with friends who are on Facebook, but they're not actually in regular chat. So that's why I don't use those. So I wrote to one of the message boards I like, and my buddy Charlie had found a link to an application called PictureSync from picturesync.net that's supposed to aid in uploading photos to all kinds of online services. I'm not going to list all the services they support, but here's just a sampling. Facebook, Flickr, Fotki, Ipernity, Webshot, SmugMug, Kodak Gallery, the list just goes on and on. They have desktop integration with iPhoto and Aperture. Yay! Along with Lightroom, Expression Media, iView Media Pro. They even support drag and drop. As I dig into this application, the most important thing for me will be whether I can actually upload photos. But for the rest of you who don't seem to be impaired in this way as much, I'll try to look for advantages over the uploaders you can already plug into Aperture or iPhoto. Well, since PictureSync syncs with so many services, they've made an interesting pricing model. If you just want it for one service, the software's free. If you want to use it on multiple services, it's only $10. If you use pro apps like Aperture and Expression Media, though, it's $20. First, that struck me as being a little bit odd. Is it because I paid more for Aperture, I should pay more for PictureSync? That doesn't make sense. But then I started thinking maybe they did it because the market for those applications is smaller, and they did have to write the integration in for just those very narrow niche applications, so the price goes up. That makes a little more sense for me, and I decided I'm at peace with it. All right, enough yapping about problems and pricing, let's actually play. When PictureSync first comes up, you have to set up the service to which you want to upload pictures. You open the accounts window and click on the add button at the bottom and name the service anything you like. I got kind of tricky. I called mine Facebook. Then you click on next and then click on authenticate. PictureSync will open your browser to the appropriate service where you enter your username and password, and then it gives PictureSync the authority to mess around in your account. The one thing that confused me was that I had to go back and authenticate again when I went to use PictureSync at a later date. Guess that makes sense. Maybe it's some sort of security hole to just let it stay connected. But it sort of implied that there should be a place I should be able to say, remember me, but I never saw that. Well, anyway, let's add some pictures. I selected 9 photos over in Aperture, and then PictureSync, I used the pull-down to choose selected pictures. It brought the 9 photos in, and a drawer opened on the right-hand side, giving me the option of adding tons of information about the photo. It's actually 4 tabs of options. The first tab lets you add title, caption, keywords, people, object, location, and rating. The second tab is related to geotagging because it has event, categories, and then a bunch of city, state, latitude, longitude kind of stuff. I don't actually do geotagging, so I'm not going to go too much into that. There's even a Google Earth pull-down, though, where you can pull in the location from there. You can put a copyright and your name as author on the photos, too. Remember, I'm only two tabs in so far. Well, next up, it shows you the camera settings using the EXIF data. That's the stuff people who actually know how to take photos use. You know those people. Not me. You know, things like exposure, resolution units, interop index. Yeah, the usual stuff. Well, anyway, it wasn't clear to me what I was supposed to do in this tab. It just seemed to be sort of a listing about the photo. It didn't seem like I could choose from that to be included somewhere. Not sure. The fourth tab was empty with the symbol for the interwebs on top. Confused at first, I hovered over the emptiness, and it told me that this will get populated after I upload photos. This is one of the coolest pieces of things about PictureSync. It actually keeps track of what you've uploaded where. So remember I said I'd keep an eye out for advantages of PictureSync over the other options? That is definitely one. So if you can't remember if you've uploaded it before, just look at it in PictureSync and it's going to tell you where you've put it. One thing I wish I could figure out is how to enter metadata on PictureSync and have it show up in the right place on Facebook. In PictureSync, you can annotate the photos, as I said, with all kinds of fields, but they weren't going into the right place on Facebook for me. For example, the name of the photo in Aperture is that goofy name the camera companies give on the memory card, you know, like DSC5324 if it's a Nikon camera. I can change the name of the photo in Aperture. They call it the changing the name of the version, but that doesn't change it in the upload to Facebook through PictureSync. PictureSync puts the name of the original in the caption instead, and it maintains that DSC5324 even if you change the caption in PictureSync. It does put the caption in, but after it puts in that annoying DSC name too. If you put in something as the title in PictureSync, then it puts that as the caption in Facebook. Very weird, and I thought it was a little unhelpful. So I actually went to the support pages, and I looked up stuff about the variables, thinking that maybe there's some way that I can map this better. And I looked all over, but it was really scary in there. There were variables, these scary variables, like with dollar title, dollar caption, things like that. I was like, oh, it bothered me. Now, I should mention, I have a master's in mechanical engineering with, you know, a couple years of calculus and all kinds of theoretical classes. But I don't know, maybe those muscles are worn out or, you know, I've lost that memory of how to deal with variables. But I mean, it was pretty weird in there. So I wrote to Jacob at PictureSync and I asked him about those scary variables, and he admitted that they are scary. I did feel a little bit better then. He explained that if I only want the caption on Facebook instead of the title, which is that DSC number, then I can open the settings for the Facebook account I set up in PictureSync and change the description variables. As soon as I looked at it in there, I really got what they're doing here. The description field in the annotation setting is defaulted to $title, $caption. That's why I was getting the title and the caption together. All I have to do is get rid of $title, and then I'll never see those annoying DSC titles on all my Facebook pics. Yay! If I choose to put a caption in Aperture, then it will show up in the caption field of Facebook. One of the coolest things about Facebook is how you can tag people in photos. It's really cool because if you tag them, it triggers a message to them that they've been tagged, which tricks them into coming over to see your photos. I haven't been able to find a way to do tagging in PictureSync. I tried to use the people field, but it didn't do anything at all. I really wish it could do this because one of the problems I have is I upload pictures to Facebook and then I try to tag them in there. People have frequently seen the pictures before I can even get in there and tag them myself. Sometimes people tag them without me. I know I sound like I'm whining here, but I really love PictureSync for one very important reason. It is wicked fast. See, the default for Facebook is that they resize your photos to 604 pixels wide after you've uploaded them. So PictureSync has a default that sets it to do that max size before it sends it up. It uploads it, it re-changes the size of the photo and uploads it in like a tenth of the time it was taking me using the Facebook Uploader plugin for Aperture. I'm talking like 20 photos in maybe a minute. I mean, it's crazy how fast it is. I do not know how they're doing this. Another problem that's frequent with digital photo uploads is photos you've taken in portrait mode instead of landscape. So you have to go into Facebook and rotate them to get them back in the right orientation. Get this, PictureSync takes care of this automatically for you. Very cool feature. I tested it and it worked perfectly with no intervention on my part. If you're crazy about a lot of photo sharing sites, you can set them all up in PictureSync and hit upload just once, and it'll upload to all of your sites at the same time. I sort of aggregate my pictures. Facebook is for snapshots of people. Flickr is for my more interesting photos of stuff instead of people. So I probably wouldn't use this feature too often. But I bet a lot of people would really like that. And again, that's a big plus over other uploaders. I started having a script error on connecting to Facebook today with PictureSync. But I got to tell you, I've had so much hinky behavior, I'm hoping it's not a problem with PictureSync. It seems real, it seems pretty good chance it's probably me. I sent a note off to Jacob this morning, so I suspect if it is on his side, he'll have a fix out to me right quick because he's been really responsive. Again, I do assume it's on my side in this case, but I felt it wouldn't be honest to tell you it all went smoothly since right now I'm having some trouble getting into it. But I used it a ton yesterday. I mean, I was uploading pictures in the car. I mean, it was amazing what I could do. So, bottom line, if you'd like wicked fast uploads to multiple online photo sharing sites, you'd like automatic photo rotation, the ability to control what content goes to which services, and the ability to tell what you've loaded where after the fact, and you'd like it all for only $10, then PictureSync is a really cool app. If you only want one wicked fast service, then download the free version and have it all. Again, that's available at picturesync.com. Well, if you're like Pierre and you live far away from Los Angeles and Orange County, then I guess it doesn't matter what kind of car you drive. Personally, I'd probably still buy a Honda if I live far away because I've had such great luck with them over the years. But I'd always wonder if the reason I had such great luck was because Honda Bob is taking care of every Honda we've ever owned. I think we're up to about, 8 or 10 of them by now, and we've had great resale value on them every time. Part of that is due to the wax jobs I do on them, of course, but I think a pretty big contribution is Honda Bob's regular maintenance. If you'd like to have superb, trustworthy work on your car by a mechanic with 30 years of experience, maybe 30 plus years, dedicated only to Hondas and Acuras, then you should give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email over at hdabob@aol.com. He'll come to your house or your work at your convenience and do a great job. Tell him Allison sent you. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, Honda Worldwide. Well, it's that time of the show again where we chit-chat across the pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie. How are you today, Bart?
I'm good, full of Christmas spirit. I had lots to drink over the last while.
Yeah, I may have tipped a couple myself, I'm afraid. Is it a bad sign that two of my good friends gave us gin for Christmas?
Well, I got two very nice bottles of whiskey for Christmas, so it's all good.
Well, we shouldn't judge each other then. Let's see, you came up with a great idea for the topic today was to talk about what third-party applications actually stuck with us this year, the ones we continue to use that are, did turn out to be the promise that we hoped they were when we first tested them out. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah. Well, the idea sort of came to me because we talk about a lot of apps. And, I mean, I don't know, I've never talked about one I haven't stuck with for at least a few weeks. But invariably, over time, a bunch of them drop off anyway.
Yeah, even if we sound really enthusiastic early on.
Yeah, they still end up not being quite as much use as we thought they would be sometimes. So I figured those that actually we still use at least once a week would probably be worth, listing off. It could be an interesting sort of end of year topic that isn't quite as cliche as every other end of year topic.
Right. So should we take turns? How should we do this?
Well, maybe if we start on my list, the chances are there's a lot of these we're going to agree on.
That could be.
And then hopefully there'll be a few different in each of our lists.
Okay.
I notice your list is bigger than mine. Quite a bit bigger than mine, actually.
But many of the ones on mine I think you're going to call dibs on when I get there, right?
Possibly. So starting at the top of mine, these are in no particular order. I have Evernote up there, which I don't think you have.
I actually didn't put Evernote on there. I was all bullish and excited about it, and it just hasn't occurred to me what I would use it for. I hear everybody talking about it, but I'm just kind of like, really, what for?
I mainly use it. I used to use stickies all the time for everything whenever I need to remind myself of something. And stickies don't sync between Macs. Whereas with Evernote, my notes do follow me around. Hmm. So I use it in work. I use it at home. I use it on the laptop. And now I can get it on the iPhone.
So is it like a to-do list for you then?
No, it's let me see. I for the last when I was trying to decide, you know, to make my own Christmas cards, I was sort of building up a list in my head of who I had to send the card to. So I kept a list in Evernote and kept updating it whenever inspiration would hit. It's like, oh, must remember to get them a card, add them to the list. Must remember to get them a card, add them to the list. Hmm. Or whenever I discover how to solve some sort of bizarre problem, or I come across a terminal command that I think, oh, that'll be interesting for later, I stick them all into Evernote, tag them, and then they're very easy to find later. So if I remember that there was some sort of cool flag to the LSOF command, I just type LSOF into the search and up will come the article or link or whatever it was I saved.
That's actually kind of handy. I tend to put that kind of thing, that sort of stuff I do at work more, and I would tend to put that in a wiki just because I can get to it everywhere from there. I never thought of doing that for home, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, I've actually found that I've ended up with a lot of notes in Evernote, and I don't have stickies anymore. So it's all gone into Evernote.
I am not.
And it's the syncing that does it for me.
I bet. And then there's an iPhone app as well?
Yeah, the iPhone app is actually quite good. It started off horrendous, really, really poor. You got the impression they did it so they could add a checkbox, you know, supports iPhone.
Right.
But it's come an awful, awful long way with every new version. So it's actually quite good now. And it's very handy. You're out and about and you suddenly remember, oh, you know, how did I do X or Y? You just type in a search and ba-ding, there it is, anywhere. So I'm very happy with Evernote. And they're branching out a lot, so it's now a premium service, but I haven't subscribed to that. I'm happy with just text. I don't keep PDFs and anything like that, just simple text.
Do you have to pay the premium rate if you put in photos?
And I don't think it's for photos. With the premium rate, you can basically use it like Dropbox, which is another one that we should definitely share Dropbox, don't we? Yes,
right,
we do.
Right.
So you can basically have it sync files between your machines as well if you pay them the premium. And it does other stuff too on the premium, but I've never bothered. For me, it's just textual notes that sync and that are easy to search.
So the thing that excited me about Evernote early on was the idea of character recognition. And the example the guy gave was take a picture of a bottle of wine because you can never remember later. But I haven't found that the text recognition works very well at all.
I don't use it for that kind of thing.
I see.
It's text, and it works really well as text.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next one. What do you have?
NetNewsWire, and I use NetNewsWire so much. To be honest, IMP Live is the reason, well, one of many reasons I'm a huge NetNewsWire addict. But it, you know, NetNewsWire allows you to sync what you have and haven't read. So it's an RSS reader, and it lets you organize them nicely into folders and stuff. And it's a very nice RSS reader. But the syncing is what's great. So when I come home, I know it knows what I've read at work. So it marks it as new or not new. There's an iPhone app that works very well. Again, it synchronizes your read status, as it calls it, across them all. So when I read stuff in bed or whatever, it synchronizes when I get up later and onto my laptop and synchronizes back to my work machine. It's just lovely. And then you have this idea of clippings, where when you find something interesting, you can tag it for later use. And so that's how I build up stories to include on IMP Live on Fridays. So I go through the week and I keep adding stuff to my clippings. And then on Friday, it's easy to generate the show notes and the show plan just by looking at what I've clipped.
Interesting. You know, I still don't use an RSS reader. I keep thinking I should. I don't know. I feel like I spend so much time reading email when I get home and then writing the show notes and, you know, conversing with friends on Facebook that there's no time left over to actually read RSS feeds.
Oh, dear. No, I have hundreds. I use it to keep up with all my Flickr groups as well.
Oh, okay. So you get notification in there if someone's done something in the Flickr groups?
Well, yeah, there's an RSS. Flickr has RSS feeds for the photo pools. So whenever someone adds a new photo to a group I'm interested in, it shows up as an entry in the RSS feed for that group.
Does the photo actually show up?
Yeah, a little thumbnail shows up, and if it's interesting, I can click on it. The other thing about NetNewsWire that I absolutely have fallen in love with, and it now makes me very grumpy about another app I'll get to in a minute, but it's designed to be used from the keyboard with one hand. The idea being you should be able to hold a cup of coffee in one hand and navigate your RSS feeds with the other hand. That's actually what the designer said he designed it for, and it works. It really does. With one hand and a few keystrokes, you can make your way through all of your news feeds.
Oh,
it's
my
brilliant.
Gosh. Have you ever noticed that, now I may get the terminology wrong here, but I think it's hex characters can all be typed with the left hand? It's something like that. There was some set of numbers that I was always having to type in, numbers and letters, and they were all on the left-hand side of the keyboard. And I thought it was hex characters or something
like
that.
Well, hex can't be because, hang on, hex is A is there, B is there. C, D, E, F. Yes, hex is all on the left.
Isn't that interesting? I guess you're supposed to drink coffee when you're typing in hex characters, too.
Yeah, but then with the numbers, they're all way over on the number pad, so that's not good.
Oh, but I don't. I was using the. I don't have a number pad on my laptop, so I was using the upper characters.
Well, they stretch the whole way left to right. Anyway.
Oh, no. But I think the numbers are on the left, too. I don't think
because the numbers for hex are 0 to 9.
Oh. Never mind. Okay, the letters
zero
in hex.
0 to 9, A to F.
I've now narrowed it down to the letters in hex.
But they are. They're all together. I've just checked.
That's strange. All right. What's next?
Okay, the next is two we definitely agree on. Dropbox and Caffeine.
Definitely. So Dropbox is what we use to share files between, well, actually, I get a lot of audio files from people, and Dropbox is a great way to get those. And I finally can consistently give the right file and the right URL to Tim Verporten. I don't think I ever got it once in a row when I would send him a link when I would try to FTP it elsewhere. So
I actually don't use it for sharing with people at all. I use it entirely to keep my important files. I use it as a mobile me that works.
So
I use it as an iDisk replacement. I have all of my important documents in my Dropbox, and which means I can get them from work, I can get them from home, I can get them from my laptop, and there's a web interface to them. So I actually use it as an iDisk, and it's fantastic.
Interesting. I never thought of using it that way. Well, that's pretty cool. Now, you also mentioned Caffeine.
Yeah, we both love this one. Do you want to explain it, since I've been doing way too much talking?
No, that's okay, because I've got 146 things on my list, so you go ahead.
Okay. Basically, a lot of times when you're watching video or whatever, your Mac will decide to go into power-saving mode and dim your screen or start your screensaver or do whatever it does when you leave it alone for a while. And sometimes you just don't want it to, so you give it some caffeine to keep it awake. It's a little thing in your menu bar. When you click on it, it stops your machine going to sleep, and when you unclick it, it lets your machine behave as normal again.
Specifically, I like it for, invariably, I'm playing a video for somebody in YouTube or something like that, and the screen will dim. That's when I probably use it the most.
Definitely. YouTube, that kind of thing. It's exceptionally handy. I would be lost without it.
Definitely.
Teeny, teeny, tiny app. It's like 200K or something.
I like it that they did an update, and the update was it used to be 3 Z's for sleeping and not sleeping, and now it's a cup of coffee with or without coffee in it.
Yeah, I actually think the old icon is clearer.
Yeah.
So I actually haven't updated my machines.
I'm not planning to. It's a case of where they didn't mess with something that works, though.
I guess, apart from the icon, which also worked. But anyway,
yeah, that's true.
It functions perfectly, regardless of whether it's coffees or Zeds. The next one on my list, then, is Teleport, which allows me to share one keyboard and mouse between two computers. It's basically Synergy, but for Mac only, and it works. Works really well, really easy to set up.
I do remember when we got onto that, and I think one thing we're noticing between the two of us that's different is I only use one computer at home all the time, and when I'm at work, I don't do any of my home stuff. So I don't find that the syncing applications would help me that much, and I don't use a second computer, so Teleport doesn't. But I can see how that'd be really, really useful.
Well, my setup at home is straight in front of me is the monitor from a Mac Mini with my nice big ergonomic keyboard and ergonomic mouse. And then to my left is my MacBook Pro. And so having it be able to move the mouse off the left side of my Mac Mini screen and into the MacBook Pro effectively means I can use my nice ergonomic keyboard regardless of which screen I'm looking at. So I use it a lot at home. It's dead handy.
If anybody listening thinks that Bart is actually smoking something, that can't be what he actually means. He really does mean that you've got a mouse that you can drag from one screen to the other, and you're actually changing operating systems. You can do it between different operating systems too, right? Or is that
only using Synergy?
Okay.
Yeah. Teleport is a Mac version of Synergy that's Mac only, and it has a lot of enhancements over basic Synergy.
Cool.
Chief among which is how really easy it is to set up. But it'll also synchronize your clipboard, and it can even drag and drop files from one machine to another, which is just bizarre. So you can pick up something on the desktop of one and magically beam it to the other. It's very cool, though. It's also free. Another nice, cheap, free one that's next on my list is SoundSource. Insanely simple little menu bar app. Has a little icon of what looks like a set of headphones. And when you click on it, it lets you choose your audio sources from a menu. So you can change your output from internal speakers to my headset, your input, and your system sound. Really dead handy. Really simple, free again.
You know, Bart, I one of the things Bart and I did before we put this together was we scanned our menu bar to see what ones, what kind of things we used all the time. If it gets a coveted spot in our menu bar, it's probably a good app. I didn't even remember. I'm using that so instinctively. I thought that was part of the OS. I forgot that isn't. I can't live without Sound Source.
It's fantastic. It even has sliders in the drop-down menu to let you change the volumes on these things, which is kind of weird, and that's a Leopard-only feature, but it's cool. It is. It's actually so ingrained that, I mean, there's another one which I have to thank you for teaching me about, is Magical, which is a replacement for the standard system clock. And it's so cool, and it sits so naturally in your menu bar that you can easily forget it's not actually part of OS X.
I didn't notice that one either. I forgot all about it, because it's just what I have to have.
Yeah, and it's I've really, really come to depend on it so much. And you only told me about it a few weeks ago, but I can guarantee it's going to be a keeper. It's bloody cool.
And we have to give Debbie T credit for that one, because I stole that one from her.
Oh, it's Debbie. Cool. Excellent. Next on my list, then, is one I doubt very many people are going to have, is Jellyfish, which is basically an SSH bookmark application. If you don't use SSH to log into your servers, you have absolutely positively no use for Jellyfish. But as a sysadmin, I spend most of my life in terminal windows and various Linux servers, and Jellyfish is just an absolute godsend for me. So I use it all the time in work, and I use it at home as well.
So is that why fish is spelled F-I-S-S-H?
Exactly. So it's jelly and then F-I-S-S-H for fish.
Oh, isn't and that cute? So what does it
pun.
Do exactly?
Yeah. It lets you define bookmarks for SSH servers, so you can specify what background, color, and image the terminal window will have. You specify your username, and you can also specify any SSH tunnels you want to set up. And so you just choose it from the Jellyfish menu, and it'll connect to that server.
Cool.
And I have it set up so that all my different servers have a different background. A red background indicates it's a live server. A green background indicates it's a test server.
Ah, so
screw around
in green.
So I can tell very easily. Screw around in green, be really careful in red.
It's amazing how those visual things have to work, right?
I find it very important, and it just makes my life so much easier, because when I use Exposé, I can find my servers more quickly and stuff. I'm insanely fond of it, but it's a very nerdy one, probably sysadmins only, really. Next up is one I almost forgot about, because I use it so much, but it blends in so much. It's Fluid, for creating, basically turning a web page into an app.
Huh.
This is definitely one we've talked about a lot. I have two Fluid apps I use all the time. One for Flickr, so that to me Flickr is a standalone app in my dock, and the other one is Mobile Me, for the Mobile Me web interface.
Oh, really?
I use them all. Well, yeah, I've been forced to do that in work because Mobile Me doesn't like going through proxies, so I have to use the web interface. And the only way to make the web interface tolerable is to have it as a sort of semi-standalone app using Fluid.
So the advantage of turning a website into a Fluid application is that you can use the command tab to flip between them as though it were a real app, instead of having to find the browser and then find the right tab?
That's one of the advantages. The other is you can have custom bookmarks in each Fluid browser. So in Flickr, I have my Flickr groups as bookmarks, which I don't want as bookmarks in my regular browser.
Oh.
And you have a custom homepage. So when I click on home in the Flickr Fluid app, it takes me to my Flickr homepage instead of to my actual homepage.
Now, does Fluid work with Safari and Firefox?
Well, no, because it's a standalone app. So Fluid is a wrapper for WebKit.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Cool.
Yeah, so effectively it's a standalone Safari, really, because it's using WebKit.
Right.
Well, I'm really, really fond of it. I use it all the time. And it's one I almost forgot about.
I keep thinking I'm going to use it, but I haven't. And, you know, I've played with it, but it hasn't really stuck for me yet.
Oh, it's a really big one for me. Another one, then, I have you to thank for, because you bought it for me as a thank you for something, was ImageWell.
Oh, that's right.
Which is a teeny tiny little app that basically lets you very quickly and easily resize images and add a little drop shadow. That's what I used it for. It does other things too. But basically, it's quickly resizing images. I have it added to my Finder, to the sort of the bar at the top of the Finder. So I drag and drop images onto it, and it launches. I do what I want to do, and then I hit send to temp folder, and it moves it to the temp folder. I like it a lot. It used to be free, and then it became a paid app. To be perfectly honest, I'm not entirely sure I would have bought it, but since you bought it for me, I use it all the time.
Now, I thought the reason what I thought would excite you about the paid app, but I think you had another process for it, was that the paid version was what allowed you to do watermarking. I thought the other version was free.
I thought it all became paid eventually. It used to be that the paid app gave you extra annotation tools.
Right, right.
And you had a limited set in the non-paid app, but I'm pretty sure it became completely paid. But I actually thought I would use the annotation stuff a lot, but in reality, it turns out I've used it about once this year. Well, okay, maybe twice, but it's not something I've used a lot. I used it recently. There's a photo on my Flickr stream called The Desk of a Nerd, where I've just used it to label all the nerdy stuff on my desk. But other than that, this is the only time I can remember using the annotation stuff, which I thought I'd use a lot, and I don't. So it's one of those, you know, we did it on the show, and I was convinced I was going to love that aspect, and it turns out I hardly ever use it.
But it does the thing you want it to do really well.
It does what I want to do really well. So when I'm uploading stuff to Flickr or whatever, or when I'm sticking stuff on my blog, I mainly use it for the blog. I like to have a drop shadow on my images because I think it just looks better on the blog. So I ram it into ImageWelt, resize it to a width of 450 pixels and put a drop shadow on it and then export it again.
That's a good way to do it. I do that using Sketch because I like to resize. Yeah. I don't have a standard size usually. I just like to change things up. But the drop shadow is definitely something you got to do.
Yeah, so for me, for my blog template, 450 pixels with a drop shadow works perfectly. So that's what I do in all my images. Next one up, I'd actually almost forgotten about because I use it so much. It's funny how you forget about the ones you use so much because they become second nature, is Transmit.
Transmit for the win. Transmit.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next few, actually the next four
are all... We should explain what Transmit is, though.
Yeah, it's FTP. Any protocol for moving files around, Transmit does it. FTP, SFTP, WebDAV, it even does Amazon S3.
Wow.
And I'm sure it does more.
I just use it to drag and drop my the images and show notes stuff for the blog. Just drag it from one window to another and it works. Love it.
Yeah, it behaves very, very much like a Finder window. So you just drag and drop stuff in and out of it and it just works. It's a really nicely done Mac app. I'm pretty sure it's won awards from Apple.
And I think it does cost a little bit of money, but it's, you know, definitely in the shareware category.
I think it's about $30 or something. It's not massively expensive, and I know it's worth the money.
Definitely for me.
Yeah, definitely. Then the next four are all free, and I use them so often I'd actually left them off the list till I looked at your list.
Cheater.
Yeah, I know. So that's Adium, Thunderbird, Firefox, and Twirl. So basically how I talk to the world.
So Adium is the chat client that we both like. We've gone into extensive discussion of whether iChat is any good. The main reason I use Adium instead of iChat is because I can have my Facebook friends on there too. So if somebody logs into Facebook, I can chat with them. So I really like Adium for that.
Yeah, it just does so, so many protocols and has them all nicely wrapped together.
Right, right, right.
It's the one app that gives you everything, is the way I look at it, instead of having lots of chat apps. Thunderbird, because I hate Apple Mail. Thunderbird is just fantastic at dealing with IMAP accounts. I think it does it much better. What I used to not have any complaints about Thunderbird until I started using NetNewsWire. And now, I mean, NetNewsWire has a very Thunderbird-y interface, you know, with your folders down and the left pane and then, you know, a main view on your right pane. It has exactly the same three-pane layout, in fact, NetNewsWire does as Thunderbird. And in NetNewsWire, I'm used to using those navigation keys on the keyboard now, and they don't work in Thunderbird.
Oh,
and because it's such a similar looking interface, I'm constantly trying to use the NetNewsWire commands in Thunderbird. It's just driving me nuts. And I mean, I never had a complaint about Thunderbird before, and it's not entirely a valid complaint, I guess, that, you know, my mail client doesn't behave like my RSS reader. It's probably not, you know, I'm not sure it's a reasonable complaint, but it does annoy me.
That's funny. Well, maybe sometime we should do a show all about mail versus Thunderbird, because I don't see what's not to like about mail. I love Apple Mail. I just, everything about it works great.
We should have that conversation, because I think it's going to end up being like the iPhoto aperture discussion. It's just that our brains are physically different, and one suits one way of doing things, and one suits another.
Right. We better hold off on that one. Twirl. Yeah. So Twirl is our... our Twitter client of choice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we went through, I know we did a lot of shows on Twitter clients, and we went through loads and loads of them, and Twirl stuck with me, and I think it stuck with you as well.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the next one you stole from me. You don't get to just go taking off my list and snaking it up there.
Well, we already talked about a Magical.
No, the one after that.
Oh. Yeah.
I guess
this is
one
that you've been plugging for years and years and years and years and years, and I've only started using a few months ago, and the reason I use it is just weird. But it's Rapido-Write. So you get to specify a little shortcut, and whenever you type it, it fills in a big long thing.
And I've tested about 28 of these applications, and I definitely prefer this one. I'm pretty sure it's free, isn't it?
This is the free one, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, I call it Rapido-Write, like rapid with an O.
Yeah, I call it Rapido, I don't know.
That's your accent. Now, why do you say it's weird how you use it?
Well, the only thing I use it for is for Flickr. Some Flickr groups ask you to post comments with a predefined badge. And so when you're a member of 15 or 20 groups with badges, it's really awkward to have to go copy and paste the badge off their homepage each time. Mm. So I've set up Rapido-Write shortcuts for all the badges I use.
Oh, okay. You know what I use it most for? Probably the single thing I use it most for is the way you align an image to the right or left if you're inside WordPress is this obscure little command that drives me crazy. And you finally wrote it all down for me. So I created one that says, I just sent it to you, says style equals, quote, float colon right colon margin colon 5px, unquote. I am not going to type that every time I want to align an image. So align right and align left are AR semicolon and AL semicolon.
Excellent.
Love
it. Yeah, that's a great use for it. It's, you know, it's for sticking in chunks. I mean, some people use it for their signatures.
Oh, I definitely
whenever you
use it
have
for that.
Something you type often, you make a little Rapido-Write shortcut for it, and then you don't have to type it out all the time.
Honda Bob's phone number, Honda Bob's email address. It's in everyone.
Excellent. And that sort of brings me to the end of my list, but your list then is quite a bit longer.
Okay, we'll do the leftovers then. I am addicted to Aperture now. I noticed you didn't put iPhoto because that's not a third party yet. Oh, Aperture doesn't count as third party either.
No, Apple make that. So, Nina, you're not allowed that one.
Come on, it's so cool. All right, fine. Let's see.
Well, everyone knows that you're an Aperture fan and I'm an iPhoto fan. So
yeah, but we're going to
change
that. I don't
think anyone was in any doubt.
We're going to change that. So I mentioned Sketch a little bit. Sketch for taking image captures, throwing on some annotation. You can do a web post, so you can throw it up on the web to send people a link. Doing the drop shadow, arrows, all kinds of stuff. Love it. Sketch is awesome. Yeah. Let's see. We did Transmit Adium. Oh, I put Transmit on twice. That's how I made my list look longer. Twirl.
That's how much you love it, is it?
Definitely. Feeder from Reinvented Software from Steve Harris. That's the application I use for creating my podcast feed.
So we're here thanks to Feeder.
Exactly. I don't know why you don't use Feeder.
Because Stu looks after that.
And you use Libsyn's feed. I understand that was a little bit of a muck up yesterday, huh?
Yeah, apparently Libsyn decided that who needs feeds? Well, that killed a lot of podcasts. I think apparently it knocked Leo off the air as well. So.
Oh, wow. It actually caused me problems, and I don't use them as a feed, as to create my feed. Very strange.
Yeah, well, I'm expecting some sort of explanation/apology email from them, and if that doesn't come, I'm going to be grumpy.
Well, anyway, if you'd been using Feeder. So I put down Firefox 3 specifically because I don't use Safari. And that's why it really stands out to me. I use it on occasion to test things. If something hinky's going on in Firefox, I'll go over there, but not too much.
Crud, I just noticed I forgot one, but carry on.
Let's see. We talked about Dropbox, Caffeine, Rapido-Write. I also use Rapido Serial. I had a lot of trouble remembering.
Damn, I forgot another one.
Ah, you don't get to snake these. I should.
No, I'm not snaking these. These are all different ones
That
do the same job. So I have two more to add.
All right.
I actually use really often. How did I forget those? Anyway, carry on.
So Rapido Serial is what I use to store my serial numbers. It's also free, and it's a great way to just, you put in the name of your application, you put in the serial number that you got, because I don't know about you, but it's really often I go back and realize I can't remember where I put that serial number. I'm digging through old emails or something like that. Do you have another tool you use for that?
Yeah, I use Password Vault. I don't know how I forgot that to my list. I use it for storing all my passwords and my serial numbers and my account numbers for like electricity and phone and all that kind of stuff. All that important information that you just don't want to forget.
Oh, okay.
Account numbers, all that kind of stuff. It all goes into Password Vault. It's all nicely encrypted. It works off a thumb drive optionally. And that thumb drive contains your data in one folder and then three executable files. One for Mac, one for Windows, one for Linux. And the three executable files in the thumb drive all read off the same data folder.
I remember
so
I was going to get that for Steve.
Password
I never
everywhere.
Did.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I absolutely adore it. I don't know how I left it off my list. Well, carry on. I'll jump in with the next ones in a minute.
Okay. So Rapido Serial is not an encrypted, crazy, wild thing like that, I don't think. I mean, I think it requires a password to go in, but I don't get the sense that that's really the purpose. It's really for just holding on to serial numbers. I am in love with CamTwist. CamTwist is the application I use in order to create the live feed of into Ustream every Sunday night at 5 o'clock GMT minus eight. get a little plug in. So that's the application that lets me send the desktop view and my eyesight into the same image and then send it over to Ustream. So that's a lot of fun. Free.
Yeah, it gives you a nice picture in picture kind of thing.
Yeah. Quicksilver. If I had to lose every application on my Mac and keep one, it would be Quicksilver. Now, I know you're a big old Spotlight fan, but you're just wrong about that. There's so much you can't do.
I know, but I can go to someone else's Mac without feeling as if someone's lopped off my arm.
Yeah, that's true. I try not to use anybody else's. Let's see, App Delete. I still love App Delete. That's the application that lets you drag another application onto App Delete, and it goes off and it finds all those little tiny hidden folders, files and folders that it thinks you are that used to be there and you need to get rid of when you really want to delete an application.
Yeah.
Now that one used to be free, but it's paid for now. But I think it's pretty cheap. It seems to me it was really inexpensive.
Cool.
Let's see.
I actually don't use that because I've stopped installing lots of stuff, or I've stopped uninstalling it. Perhaps that's more realistic.
I don't use it real often, but when I need to delete an application, when I started trying to find the apps I actually use, I really should go through and delete some applications. I've probably got 50 I haven't used in the last year, so definitely should do that. Let's see, Audio Hijack Pro, that's what I'm using. I did it wrong. Audio Hijack Pro I don't use all that often, but what I meant to say was Wiretap Studio, because Wiretap Studio is the one I'm using right now to record the podcast. So the interview with you, that's definitely my tool of choice there. I have used Audio Hijack Pro on occasion. Now I'm using it in creating the live feed over at Ustream, GMT minus 8, 5 o'clock. Let's see. Do you use any tools in that category?
The closest I get is Call Recorder, which is a Skype plugin. It's. I guess I use that a fair bit, but I'm not sure it counts as an app. so I don't really use anything like that, no.
Actually, that's the app you're supposed to be using to do the backup recording, but we always forget to do, right?
Yeah, that's the one I didn't hit record on, yeah.
All right, and then let's see, for backup, Super Duper. Use Super Duper every single week.
Yeah, this is one I can't believe I forgot. I left out rsync from my list, which is an rsync GUI for OS X. I don't know how I left it out, because I do loads of backups with rsync.
That's right. That was a bad one to forget.
It was.
Let's see. Now, this might be cheating, because I said once a week. We did say once a week, but it's a consistent tool, maybe on a little longer time frame, is Disk Inventory X. And that's a tool I use to get rid of files that I don't need when I'm running out of disk space. I've got a 330 gig hard drive in this machine, and I now have, I think, 7 gig free right now, so it's about time to run it again.
Wow. That's impressive. I only have an 80 gig hard drive, and I have 8 gigs free.
Yeah, well, realize, just this recording you and I are making, by the time I get done producing the show, is 2.6 gig.
Wow.
Because it starts at 300 meg inside Wiretap Studio, and then I export it to the hard drive where it turns into an AIFF. That's another 300 gig. And then I pull it into, I level 8 it. That's another 300 gig. Then I pull it into GarageBand. Okay. That's another 300 gig. Then I dump all of that out of GarageBand, which is another 300 gig. Then I pull it into iTunes where it copies it, which is another 300 gig. And finally, I make it into an MP3 file.
Which is smaller.
Which is 30 meg when we're done. So, I have to do quite a bit of machinations with it. Let's see. Okay.
What's this next one on your list? I don't even recognize it.
LXVII. That's the that's the HP 11C calculator emulator that I use. That was a freeware app sent to me by the developer when I was trying to... I was playing Stump the Podcaster with Tim Verporten. I was trying to find application freeware apps that he had never heard of, never talked about, and never heard of. And the guy wrote to me and said, I guarantee you he hasn't talked about because I wrote it. It's a really nice little app for, geeks like me that like RPN calculators.
Yeah, it's a sort of a niche app.
You know what's shocking, though, is how many people make these. I found two different HP 11C calculator emulators in the App Store for the iPhone. And that's,
I guess it's the kind of app that program nerds like, and they're the kind of people who'd write one.
I guess so, but I mean, I don't believe they've made that calculator probably in 10 years. I got my first one in college, and I've been out of college for just a couple of years now, so... Let's see, you actually reminded me. I almost forgot to put Screen Steps on the list. Anybody who's listening knows what Screen Steps is, but I just can't live without this documentation program. Just love it, love it, love it.
And the last one is obvious, I guess.
How did you miss Skype? You missed Skype on your list. That made me laugh that you forgot Skype.
That's true, actually, because considering all the podcasting I do, I spend a lot of time each week on Skype between talking to yourself and recording IMP and recording. Well, actually, I don't use it for Victor's show, but I use it for the Mac Roundtable. Yeah, I use Skype a lot now that you think of it.
You know, you've been saying IMP a few times, and we've never let you officially pimp IMP on the podcast, so most people might not even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, myself and Stu Helm and quite a few others, we run a weekly podcast called the International Mac Podcast. And every Friday evening on Ustream, usually either 8 or 9 o'clock, but we announce it on Twitter, we do a live recording where we basically go through the Apple news of the week and trying to get an international perspective. So we try to get a panel, which, you know, I'm always there, well, mostly always, so that gives an Irish view. Stu is English, so that gives us English view. We usually have Michael King, so that gives us an American point of view. We have
Texan point of view.
Texan point of view. We have lots of other Americans between Connor and Willie and various others. And then we have a couple of Canadian lads, and from time to time we're even lucky enough to get a few Australian lads. So we try to get, you know, a good international feel of things. What we don't really have a good proportion of is female contributors.
I was going to remark that you said lads quite a few times there.
Yeah, I just noticed that myself. And they are pretty much, we had Elaine Giles joins us from time to time, but she hasn't been on in a while. And I'm pretty sure Elaine is our only female contributor. You guessed it on us once, so that's another female. But if you're international and you're female and you'd like to join a podcast, please join us in IMP.
There you go. So what other, you thought of a couple more apps you had on your list?
Well, I got my two in there, rsync and Password Vault.
Ah, good, good, good.
You had a quick list of stuff that you don't actually use. Do we want to skip over that? Because we're going to run awfully long.
Actually, we are going long. I think maybe we should hold our other subject for another time, because we have gone awfully long here. But let me run through what I'm not using. What I'm really amazed by is I'm not using Microsoft Word at all. I don't use it at work. I don't use it at home. I don't see what it's for anymore.
It's for annoying you.
Now, I do still like Excel. I will continue to like Excel till the day I die or until they wreck it. But I just don't see a need
for a word
processor.
Numbers isn't good for you, you know?
I've tried numbers, and that's actually on my list of things I haven't really used that I thought I would love as iWork. I don't know. It's just weird. I don't resonate to it yet. I mean, I'm really, really into Excel, the pivot tables and all kinds of crazy stuff. But Word, I mean, why wouldn't you just do it in a wiki? Why would you ever write in Word? Don't know what it's for.
Well, on the rare, rare occasion I have to write a letter, I'll fire up Pages.
Oh, okay. I was going to say I'd use TextEdit.
For a letter? No, you want a letter to be nicely laid out and stuff.
Really?
Well, when I'm doing a letter, it's usually for my company, so I want to have my letterhead on and stuff.
Oh, okay. Oh, that sounds good. Now,
I didn't include it because I don't write letters. Like, if I write letters biannually, I'm doing well.
Now, one thing I was really hoping I would start using, and I just have not gotten into, is OmniGraffle. And I thought you used that pretty regularly.
I don't use it weekly. At work, I will use it whenever there is a need for a diagram. But there isn't half as much need for a diagram as perhaps I'd like, because I quite like playing with OmniGraffle. But one needs an actual excuse to use OmniGraffle in work.
So you're going around looking for things to diagram, but they're just not showing up, huh?
Yeah, there's just not enough things that, I guess as a sysadmin, there just isn't that much graphic-y stuff I have to do. I mean, I've done diagrams of how some of our systems hang together and some of our processes, but they're all done, and I get to update them rarely. So I'd like to use it more, but I honestly don't use it weekly, so I left it off the list. It's also far from free.
Right. It was pretty expensive. Now, I didn't make an extensive use of everything I'm not using, but just the ones that I really thought I might use, and I don't. I haven't installed Parallels on my new machine, and I don't use Crossover either. I've played with them both, you know, I've used them, but I don't need Windows, so I haven't actually seen any need. I don't have any applications that I just, oh, if I just had Windows, I could run that.
I have to say the same thing. I actually bought a copy of Crossover, installed it once, played with it for a few times, got IE running, went, oh, look, that's cool, I can test web pages, and never actually use it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a, huh.
Okay, so that works. Okay, next. Yeah, it has not ended up being something that's part of my monthly, let alone weekly use. I don't even have it on my Mac anymore. It's gone. Since I installed Leopard, I just didn't bother reinstalling it.
Yeah, I'd love to do a statistical sampling on the number of people who bought Parallels or VMware Fusion when they bought a Mac because they were switchers and they wanted to make sure they could use Windows applications, and then, you know, a year later, whether they're running it at all.
Yeah, I have a feeling a lot of people buy it as a safety blanket, and then, you know, without realizing it, they never use it.
Yeah, I would bet that's true. All right, well, hey, I think that was a really fun list of topics. That was really neat to go through. I found that interesting. And I might still go back and try Fluid again.
Yeah, it's one that either it clicks or it doesn't, I guess. Yeah, we all thought this would be a short bit because we actually have another entire topic to leave over for again.
Yeah, we're at 37.
Even though it's actually Christmas themed. 37 minutes.
They're almost 38 minutes coming up on that. So yeah, we better cut this off or it's going to be another hour and 16 minute show.
People like those, Alice.
I know, they do. In fact, they seem to like it more and more when it's more of you. That's what I'm finding. I'm getting kind of tired of all your fan mail, actually.
I quite enjoy it.
All right, well, let's see. Next Sunday, anything look strange about that? Are we on?
I think we are. I'm still on. It'll be the last day of my vacation. Sniff,
oh,
sniff.
Me too.
I'll be back to work. Well, though we could record Saturday, and then I have Sunday to look forward to.
That's right. We should be Saturday. That's what I meant. Yeah, I'm going to work one day. I'm going to work January 5th, and then I'm going to go to Macworld Expo for 3 days.
Yeah, you guys seem to... I'm just watching all the mail coming through from the Mac Roundtable people. It looks like you're going to have a great live show there in Macworld.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, we're going to do a live Mac Roundtable at Macworld on Wednesday afternoon on the show floor. We get to be on the in the podcaster booth thing, so that's going to be really fun.
Ooh, with a live audience.
Yeah, yeah. I ordered new business cards, so I've got a ream of them, so I'll be pitching them out in the audience.
I'm really looking forward to watching that. I'd love to be able to be there, but sadly, I can't.
Just a little bit far.
It's just, apart from an entire ocean in the way, there's also an entire continent on top of that. So,
funny how that works. All right, Bart, well, we will see you next week.
Indeedy. Until then, happy computing, and will it be next year by next week?
Yes, I think it will be.
In that case, happy New Year as well.
Well, I need to make a quick correction on this. I realized after I finished that recording with Bart that the LXVII calculator I was talking about is not an HP 11C. It's LXVII. Get it? 67. It's the old HP 67, which, gosh, I think that might have come out when I was my senior year in high school. I mean, that was in 1857, I think. So anyway, I did want to fix that before somebody called me and said, oh, you big dummy, you messed up. Because I do that often enough. So the week after next is Macworld Expo, as you all know, and I'm excited to announce that we will be doing a live episode of the Mac Roundtable from the Exhibit Hall show floor. How cool is that? If you're at the show, be sure to come by. We'll be on Wednesday, January 7th at 4 p.m. I would love to meet some of you there. That last year I got to meet Mac Trucker there, and it'd be fun to get to meet even more of you guys. That would be really cool. Well, it's time to sign off now, so let's sing it all together. Email me your praise, complaints, and dumb questions to allison@podfeet.com. Or if you want to send in an audio recording, you know I love those when they're 3 to 5 minutes long. Shoot that over to my Gmail address at nosillacast@gmail.com. Oh, heck, it probably doesn't matter if you mix them up anyway. But be sure to follow me on Twitter, too, at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.